The Hayes Advantage with Kathleen Hayes and Vonnie Quinn. On demand via our Bloomberg Radio Plus app. Free for iPhone and Android devices.
Very happy to welcome now back to the show, Ben Eamons. He's Senior Vice President, Portfolio Manager at PIMCO. PIMCO has its latest Global Central Bank Focus out, and we're going to talk about that and a whole lot more. Good morning, Ben.
Good morning, Kathleen. Good morning, Vonnie. It's good to be back on your show.
Yeah. Thank you. So, since we're going around the world with you, I'd like to start with a quick look at the United States, because we had the personal spending numbers out a little bit weak. We had the jump in the Chicago Purchasing Managers Index of business activity. It's kind of a hybrid of, you know, activity in Chicago, basically, and across the country. And we had the University of Michigan's consumer sentiment number have a nice pop up. How does this corner of the globe look to you?
Yeah, that looks okay. I would say that if you look at that number, it was a surprise, the PMI number in Chicago, but it does indicate that we still are sort of a sub 2% real GDP, though. And although that's not bad, if you can compare it to the data, for example, out in Europe today, it still doesn't say that we're really reaching the escape velocity in the U.S. yet, as people have been talking about.
Has anything materially changed for you, Ben, in the last couple of weeks?
Well, I guess the one thing that you could say is that the data itself in the second quarter started to soften. That happened in the U.S. and it's happened in other countries. The other thing that's happened is, of course, the volatility, as you spoke of earlier, that has started in Japan and sort of spread itself a little bit out to other major bond markets. This sort of sign that people are looking for, are we really in a change here or not? And those things are a bit different. Overall, I would say that it still is an idea of about being defensive in these markets. It demonstrates how hyperactive monetary policy is really influencing asset prices. And as these signs are there that they may start to taper or do different things, it impacts markets really quickly. So it requires to be defensive that way.
No sign of tapering, we can assume, in the euro area. Unemployment increasing to a record in April. It hit the euro area jobless rate 12.2% from 12.1% in March. There's millions of people unemployed across the continent, particularly young people. And in fact, if anything, our story noting that this increases pressures on euro area leaders, especially the European Central Bank, to do something to spur economic growth.
Yeah, it is. And it is, of course, of concern now that they're going to put the youth unemployment at the top of the agenda at the EU summit at the end of June. And that's certainly a notable thing, because I think this is becoming a concern among German officials as well, that they're looking at this saying, if this starts to worsen in the various of countries, then this could lead to potentially social unrest. I think that has something to do with that. In addition, that it hampers growth. And at the end of the day, if you have so many young people out of work, it just creates a generation of people that are at some point just out of touch, right? Their skills are no longer updated enough. The ECB has mentioned this too several times. They called this the dual market, dual labor market problem. The idea that the companies in Europe rather hire more experienced people that are somewhat older, that are not that expensive to hire in that sense, than rather than young people.
Right? And of course, that youth unemployment rate, let me just throw this in here, 24.4%. It's 19.38 million unemployed, Vonnie, of jobless people in April.
Absolutely unconscionable, Kathleen. It brings up the whole idea of structural reforms, Ben, and this being sort of the leg that's missing from policy. And we've heard about this when it comes to Japan, but it's really the leg that's missing in Europe too.
That's correct. And again, yesterday, for example, there were headlines out from Germany that were kind of like pressing on France to start taking those type of reforms too. That it is necessary to reinvigorate the labor market by making it more flexible. That's a major focus item. And it's necessary, because if you don't do that, then Europe will remain in this recession for some time, and that could lead to further issues. So I think it's a real focus at the policy level.
And I just have to also know, let's see, German unemployment, 5.4%. We'd be very happy in the U.S. to get ours to that level. Spain's unemployment rate is the highest at 26.8%. Greece, as recently as February's, 27%. It seems it underscores the the difference between the core and the periphery, and how hard it is to have a policy that fits this whole disparate group of countries.
Yeah, I mean, does it all come down to the fact that people are buying German products, they're not buying Spanish products so much?
Maybe that is the case. I think that it also has to do with just the mobility of labor itself. It's very low in the Eurozone, and that also has to change. It's another element that they're looking at, trying to start up programs to bring people from those areas in Greece or Spain to areas in Germany or the Netherlands or Nordic areas, to try to get people to work. And that's another element that's missing here. They're looking at various of ways of how to do this, but it's a medium-term process. It doesn't happen that quickly.
The St. Louis Fed president, you quote him in the latest Global Central Bank Focus coming out from PIMCO, and you say he recently posed a question: how far do you want to go into the woods, knowing that you're going to have to come out of the woods at some point? This back up in yields we're seeing, is this the market dropping crumbs to sort of lead the Fed a little bit out of the woods?
Well, maybe it is so, in the sense that it certainly got attention, because the market is, of course, feeling that with Bernanke's testimony, that he's sort of indicating they may consider this tapering in the next few meetings, that the market moves ahead of that. And as a result, other markets respond to that too. And that's the concept I talk about in this central bank focus, a correlation between sovereign yields as through the different quantitative easing programs strengthened over the last few years. And I think that they're all looking at this, and that markets are moving ahead of the Fed in that way. Now, will the Fed actually taper? That is still to be seen, given that we have to see more data, I think. It's a very data-dependent decision, but markets are certainly moving ahead of that.
Let's get a bit more into that. Let's go deeper into the woods on correlations between government bond markets and why that is important. You say that correlation is in some ways a weaker form of policy coordination, but it's not really in the central bank's control. You can see how it's been a good thing, because if bond yields fall globally, right, then everybody gets that assist and all kinds of investors get pushed into all kinds of riskier assets. But is there a risk of that correlation turning on you as the Fed starts to taper and as all central banks at some point turn course?
Yeah, that's certainly a risk, because if you have high correlation between assets, that also means that it has to do with positioning as well. So I think the recent movements you've seen in gold or now in Nikkei are examples of that correlation changing suddenly. And therefore, it's certainly of a concern. Now, there's been some research put out on this by various of banks who have looked at the correlation, and it actually goes further. It's just not only between sovereign bond yields, but it's across a lot of different asset classes. So as this quantitative easing ignited a lot of optimism in financial markets, withdrawing that quantitative easing is really delicate in that way, and that's what these correlations are saying. Now, if you withdraw the quantitative easing at the moment that growth is really taking off significantly, then that's what we call the handoff, then financial markets may then be more happier about it, saying, okay, the growth is taking off and you can withdraw the stimulus. But I think what we're seeing currently is that markets doubting that it's the right time to actually withdraw the stimulus, and then the correlation gives them this sort of this snowball effect across markets.
Well, the only country I've really seen complaining about higher yields so far is South Korea, Ben. Are there others it's impacting?
Well, I think in if you take, for example, in Japan, I think there was concern that bond yields jumped very quickly. There's two stories about that, actually. It's one that the Bank of Japan hasn't been fully transparent about this buying program, unlike the Fed or the Bank of England. They always announced a program and the market knew exactly what they're going to do, at what time, what securities. But the Bank of Japan has been less transparent in that way. That's caused some volatility in the JGB market. But the other concern has been that because the Bank of Japan wants higher inflation and higher growth, the JGB yields by itself, well, at some point should go up, of course, but it's sort of a doubtful way of like, well, is this really going to happen, yes or no? So I think in Japan they did look at this, that the yields there jumped very quickly and very volatile, and that's why they've come out several times and tried to stem the volatility.
Do you put that down, though, to Japanese central bank easing, or is this correlation? Are your yields going up also because the 10-year U.S. Treasury yield is going up.
Certainly, that has certainly something to do with that too. That's that correlation. That when we had a few days ago that the 10-year yield really broke out, that certainly JGB yields responded to that, as did yields in Europe as well as in emerging markets. So yeah, that certainly is a relationship there as well.
But of course, this is inevitable, right? We were speaking to Kevin Ferrier from Kronos Futures Management. He trades bonds out in Chicago. And he was talking about the sense of, a vortex that the bond market in the world would fall into at 2.2% on the 10-year note yield, right? The 2.2 basically held. We're back below that. But there is this sense of almost doom that yields are going to rise and rise sharply. But he also said, hey, look, financial crisis is over. You know, yields are going to rise. Fed's going to taper. It's going to happen. And we should welcome it to the extent that the bond market has to get back to normal, too. We had very negative real yields. They're starting to get back to at least flat. This is also a necessary, at some point, a healthy development, right?
You would say that, indeed, if the data validates it. That's important, because if the data doesn't validate it, then yields by itself couldn't necessarily rise too much in that way. So we have to see, let's say in U.S., real GDP really going higher than 2.5-3%.
Why? Well, let me ask you this then. Is it the PIMCO view that the only reason we're at, say, 2% now is because of quantitative easing, and without it, there'll be like zero growth?
I would say this, that ultimately nominal GDP rate determines where interest rates and other assets should be. That's the general sense. I think what markets are looking at is saying, well, if you can't really get to this higher growth rate just yet, then the Federal Reserve, for one, will not necessarily start to taper that quickly or hike interest rates. Right? And that by itself keeps rates lower. And in addition, it's also to do with inflation, right, which has been very low and subdued, like, for example, the number today. So I think those factors play a role why bond yields, if they really start to break out, you would see change in growth and inflation that validates that. And that would be then, a natural way of that happening. Now, that's not happening yet.
Right, exactly. And so, I mean, can we anticipate a bout of higher yields at any point this year, let's say, Ben?
Yeah, again, that greatly depends on the growth outlook that in the second half of this year, if the fiscal drag that has revealed itself to be larger, like more like closer to 1%, we've actually put out that we think it's even could be closer than 1.5%.
But Ben, why would the market all of a sudden now wait for the data when the big move that we saw this year came after Fed chairman testimony?
Yeah, so market anticipates, obviously, they take any cue from the Federal Reserve, particularly from Bernanke, as very serious and would start to anticipate a potential change, but then starts to rationalize at some point again, like, was this indeed validated? Were they too premature? And then yields will go down again. We've had this before, by the way, because it's not new that tapering has happened. QE1 and QE2 both have seen a slowdown in Treasury purchases, which actually were met with falling yields at that point, because I think markets rationalized that they're saying, well, growth wasn't really there when the purchases were slowed at that point, and therefore it doesn't validate to be at higher yields.
So, Ben, let's take a look at some investment implications. What should I be buying? What should I be selling? If there's correlation in global bond markets, what difference does it make what I buy? Or do I try to get out of these markets? Do I go to emerging markets or markets that are not in this correlation cycle?
Mm. You would certainly take that into account. You would be, of course, somewhat defensive. I think that at the moment, these Treasury yields are sort of at a level that's probably reaching a little bit of the upper end of its range. So that would be still something as a defensive strategy. If you look at Europe, then you would say, like, well, bond yields have fallen a lot there, so you'd be a lot more neutral that way. If you look at it,
so if you're saying near some of these markets at the top of their range, are you saying the U.S. with the benchmark 10-year right now, what, around 2.15 roughly, is this sort of a range top? Is there scope for even a small rally from here?
It may be. It depends on next week's data, for example, immediately. Right? If that's what you becoming data watching in this case, because if they indicated that they may taper, then you want the data to validate that. So I think the data, again, shows a lot of mixed signals. And that's the second quarter certainly shown softness, but also mixed signals of the fiscal drag being bigger. And therefore, we sort of seen it more of a range in treasury yield, sort of the upper end of more 2.25-ish, something like that, and the downside more something like 1.85-ish or so, and the treasury stays in that range.
How would you hedge for the risk of higher interest rates, or should you even, Ben?
Well, generally, you would be looking at the duration of your portfolio and be relative to the index lower in duration. Right, that's a defensive, basic way of doing that. You can also look at other ways of diversifying in among the different fixed income securities to not be exposed to a specific sector that would be really interest rate sensitive, for that matter. That those are kind of ways to do that. But in general sense, I think that we're in markets currently that markets are judging, is this Fed tapering going to happen? And that's what markets are responding to, I think.
Ben Niemann, thanks so much for joining us today. Appreciate it.
You're very welcome. Thank you for having me.
The Hayes Advantage, weekdays at 10 a.m. Eastern, in New York on Bloomberg 1130, in Boston on 1200 a.m. and 94.5 FM HD2, or on Sirius and XM Satellite Radio Channel 113. Copyright 2013 Bloomberg LP.